Good morning. I'm Bill Anderson. This is the time in which we normally tell you what's coming up on Central Standard, just before we get a news update from NPR News. But I have to admit, I'm not ready. In fact, I just scribbled this together moments ago. I don't know why I put it off until the last minute, but perhaps Dr. Bruce Lease can provide some insight as we spend the hour talking about something a large percentage of us struggle with at one time or another, procrastination. We've put this show off long enough. Now we're going to do it. We've gotten it together, and we hope you'll participate in the conversation as we talk about procrastination. But first, this news from NPR. One thing is a given in live radio. Miss a deadline and it can have very real consequences. Miss a deadline in the listener experience might sound like this. We call it dead air. The scourge of our industry, dead air, the thing that exists at the root of nightmares for many of us in this business. That said, still a lot of us will be working up to that deadline, occasionally, frantically so, when it really wasn't necessary. I'm Bill Anderson. This is Central Standard, and we're asking the question, why do we procrastinate? Providing some answers and maybe some solutions, psychologist Dr. Bruce Lease, a psychologist and professor of family medicine at KU Medical Center. Welcome back, Bruce.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Okay, a completely fictitious story. This guy knows he's hosting a radio show at 10 a.m. on a Monday morning. He has a busy week, a short window to prepare for the show. Yet, he allows himself to get sidetracked. The window closes, so he ends up spending a good portion of his normally relaxing Sunday evening getting ready for the show. Why does this happen?
That's completely hypothetical, right?
Of course.
Procrastination is part of the human condition. We don't like to delay gratification. And when we talk about procrastination, we're talking about delaying or avoiding one activity, something that's more of a responsibility or a commitment, typically by getting involved in another activity, a distraction that provides some instant or immediate gratification. So whoever that host was who didn't prepare the week before probably was doing other stuff that was more enjoyable.
So is it just part of the of being human? Is that what we're talking about, essentially?
Right.
We're wired that way.
Human beings are pain avoidant. And the things that we procrastinate on, we at least perceive to be painful, more painful than, you know, the plate of goodies right in front of us,
right?
Whatever it is we get distracted by. You know, it's interesting because some things that people procrastinate by doing are the very things other people procrastinate from doing.
Like, that's right.
You know, a lot of people will procrastinate and not clean their homes. You know, they let them get dirty and dusty and
right.
All that stuff. And other people have spotless homes because they're procrastinating and not doing something that's even more important. So
yeah,
it's like what's one person's junk is another person's treasure kind of thing.
And the consequences have a wide range. They can be minimal, or they can affect relationships and one's maybe perhaps career.
Yeah, I like this topic a lot because it spans from, you know, the kind of entertaining, mundane kind of procrastination where, you know, we just don't do these little things that we need to do and we rush at the last minute. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's almost entertaining on tax day to go to the post office at midnight and
yeah.
watch everybody.
Yeah, you'll see me in line. Yeah,
that's at one end of the continuum. As a healthcare professional, I'm really very, very concerned about people at the other end of the continuum when we talk about procrastination.
But before you go there, using taxes as an example, that has very real pocketbook consequences. Yet, time and time again, and I'm guilty as charged time and time again. I'm there just before midnight. I've been there just before midnight only to find the post office closed, thus incurring late fees.
It's interesting that you say that before going from that kind of light end of the continuum with taxes to the heavy end, which could be life-threatening illnesses, I have observed firsthand people who procrastinate on taxes. And my wife is a CPA, so, you know, I see the rush at the end yes. of the season. And, you know, the most that will happen is that people, for some people, file a delay, and then they will have to pay, you know, their tax in advance anyway. But at the other end of the continuum, I've seen lives ruined by people who procrastinate on keeping track of their expenses so that when it's time to file, they're not prepared. They come in with big bags of stuff. They end up in a mess. And I've seen people lose full bags or hear about people who've lost full bags of receipts and end up on the IRS files of people that will be severely punished.
Have you seen people ruined by this,
yes.
financially ruined?
Yes, I absolutely have.
I've seen
devastation. I can't count the number of times I've seen it. I've seen it in people in the community, and I've seen it in my practice.
Okay. Well, let's stay with taxes just for a moment here. You know, you would think, and I'll use myself as an example, you would think that based on the anxiety that surfaces, that I experience, that I would learn from all those miserable experiences of past years. Yet, no.
Well, it's interesting because that is right. People accommodate themselves to that level of discomfort so that they it becomes normal. One of the reasons why people become chronic procrastinators is that they tell themselves little stories like, I do my best work at the last minute, etc. And that's simply not true. But while we're on the domain of taxes and the punishment that comes with not taking care of taxes, what about just saving for retirement or paying bills generally? I know
Good
of
point.
People that have financial concerns and they simply won't open their bills. Not only do they they have the concern about paying the bills, but they won't even open them. So they don't even know when they're being threatened by legal action. It's just it can get pretty bad with money as well as health and all the other stuff.
Well, that sounds like avoidance.
That's what we're talking about.
Okay.
You know, procrastination is all about delaying what needs to be done or what one commits to, and delaying is avoiding, and that's the behavioral component. And interestingly, avoidant process, avoiding stuff, is usually a function of anxiety. So there's an emotional component, anxiety, fear, frustration, even anger.
Mm-hmm.
There's a thought process that goes into it. It's thinking, oh, I can wait. I'll do it tomorrow. I could go on and on with the list of thoughts people have that lead them to procrastinate. And then ultimately, there's the behavior.
You know, perhaps centuries ago, when humans spent many of their waking hours just simply surviving, it was all about survival and nothing else. Procrastination, I have to believe, was not as prevalent, maybe didn't exist at all.
There is good research to show that procrastination has actually gotten worse with the advent of social media.
Oh, yeah.
And with the internet, because it provides such immediate gratification for the people who get hooked on it. Gaming is another thing that's come with time. The ability to get access to information, games, you know, trivia, all of that is very, very seductive. When you were sitting at home with things to do and things to learn, and there was no such thing as radio, television, the internet, etc., you're sitting there and there's something to do and there's really not much to take you away from it.
Yeah.
But clearly people have become more immersed in things that they shouldn't be doing.
Our generation a lot more so than our parents' generation?
I don't know about that for sure. I have to imagine if that's the case because it's increasing with time. But certainly the internet has created an environment that just sucks people away from the things that they need to be doing.
Does America take this procrastination thing to a higher level, do you think, in relation to other nations or other cultures elsewhere?
I don't know that. I imagine that the more technologically advanced a culture is, the more they can surf the alternatives to the, the work they should be doing. But that's more of a hypothesis than a, than what I know to be fact.
The Practice of Procrastination. You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR. I'm Bill Anderson. Dr. Bruce Lease, psychologist and professor of family medicine at KU Med Center, is taking your calls, 235-2888, 816-235-2888. Do you struggle with procrastination? Maybe you overcame a serious struggle with it. How'd you do that? Bruce, you wear a lot of hats. You're a business person. You're a professor. You're a family guy. You're very involved in your community. Do you ever find yourself falling victim to procrastination, or do you have that self-discipline that allows you to overcome it?
I don't know if it's I guess it's self-discipline. The way I operate is that I tend to commit myself to getting things done by a certain time, and you know, I just feel like I have no choice. But that may just be the psychology of it. I may just tell myself that I have no choice but to get things done in order to not procrastinate. You know, if I know I'm doing something like this morning, I just tell myself I can look like a fool and do a bad job, or I can start preparing at least a week in advance. And, you know, I tend to set things up with deadlines and know that there'll be real consequences if I don't do them.
Have you always been this way?
You know, do you have a couch I can lie on? I'll tell you my whole story.
Right over here. Okay. Follow me.
You know, I'll just say it. I grew up poor, and I didn't want to be poor my whole adult life. And I figured out that the only way that I wasn't going to – the only way I was going to get out of – the hole financially and socioeconomically that our family was in was to do what I say I was going to do. I watched a lot of people talk big but not do much, and I realized if I didn't do much, I wasn't going to get anywhere. So, and that brings me to a point that it probably is the answer to an earlier question. You asked about generations. I was just talking to a neighbor yesterday who is over-functioning for his kids, I'll just say. I'm changing a little bit because I don't want to identify anyone.
Yeah, sure.
And we were having a really nice conversation. And he earnestly said to me, don't ever do that. Don't ever overfunction for your kids because you'll never be able to stop. Why is that relevant to procrastination? Because it is not difficult to teach kids to be dependent on you as a parent. All you have to do is overfunction for them. And they'll always be waiting for mommy and daddy to come along, swoop in, and rescue.
Is overfunctioning like another way to describe a helicoptering parent and an enabling parent?
Yeah. So we're getting at perhaps the etiology or cause of some people's chronic procrastination. I once had a professor that said, "If you do, there's nothing wrong with doing something wrong. It's getting away with it." So people who don't do what they're supposed to do when they're young and their parents rescue them or getting away with it. And how could they possibly grow up to be highly disciplined people if there's someone always rescuing them? Which brings me back to the point about how I grew up. There was no one there to rescue me. So,
well, I was reading in Psychology Today that everyone procrastinates at least sometimes, but about 20% of people chronically avoid difficult tasks and deliberately look for distractions. So that sounds to me like they're on the unhealthy scale. How do we start? Where do we start? Where do we begin to address that problem?
It's interesting that you found that in Psychology Today. I want to talk about how to address it. But while you were reading Psychology Today, I was probably reading the European Psychologist, the 2013 issue, and an author.
Only if it was late last night.
An author, Klingseek, I guess is his name, talked about that group that you just talked about, that 20%. So a clinically procrastinating person, by their definition, procrastinates for more than 6 months, for more than a half a day each time. Sounds awfully an awful lot like obsessive compulsive disorder. And it causes more than five other problems. So that's when it gets to its worst, when you just you know you're not doing something and you half a day goes by and you should have, and you find a ton of other things, the internet or whatever. But I think your question is how to address it at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I guess recognition is the first the first point of dealing with it.
Yeah, recognition. And before talking about what to do about it, I think it's important to just add on that I am most interested in addressing procrastination that becomes what I'll call a health problem. And I don't just mean physical health. I mean mental health, physical fitness type of health, vocational health, academic health. I mean, people who procrastinate, who put off resolving issues with other people, people who don't do what they need to do at work. I mean, these people really put their own well-being at risk. So as we talk about what to do, I think it's really vital to think about procrastination as a real issue that really harms lives. The worst case scenario is somebody with a life-threatening illness that just puts off healthcare maintenance or just having the bump or the rash or the bleeding checked out by a doctor. So that kind of life-threatening procrastination is really, really important to me. And addressing that is a little different from just not getting your homework done on time or your preparation for our show.
but you're talking about something very life-threatening. I just don't understand why an individual would take that approach.
Fear. I mean, I've pretty much dedicated my career to figuring out why people put themselves in harm's way. And people have so much fear about those things that make them vulnerable and that they experience as threatening, that they think that facing it will only prove that they were right in what they feared.
Okay.
There are people who have cancers that are coming through their skin that don't go to a doctor until they can't move anymore. So
235-2888, 816-235-2888. We'd like to hear from you. Are you a procrastinator? Don't put that phone call off any longer. Call now, 235-2888. There's this writer, the internet's such a dangerous thing. I found this writer investor by the name of Paul Graham. I don't know this person by Adam, but I was taken by something he wrote. There are three variants of procrastination, depending on what you do instead of working on something. You could work on A, nothing, B, something less important, or C, something more important. That test, that last type, I would argue, is good procrastination.
Ah. Huh.
So
I would simply say that's not procrastination.
What is it?
That's priority setting and achievement.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this is all about. A lot of people do what we're calling procrastination because they haven't really formulated their priorities carefully. They say, I'll do that, and it's really probably shouldn't be a priority for them. Or they say, I'll do that, and it should be a priority, and then they don't follow through. So they make a commitment to do something, and they shouldn't. So Mr. or Dr. Graham, who you read, I think makes an interesting point. You do nothing, you do something trivial, or you do something more important. The moment you go to something more important, I would argue that that's no longer procrastination.
So you would argue that there isn't such a thing as healthy procrastination.
It's like healthy murder. I mean, it's no longer murder if it's healthy. It's a contradiction in terms that, but it's an interesting question.
Well, Pat responded to our call for questions, and Pat is calling from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning.
Go ahead, Pat.
I just had a question about your speaker talking about a link between perfectionism and procrastination.
Good question.
Very good question, because it actually has been linked frequently in the literature, the research on procrastination. And perfectionism is the belief that it's not good enough unless it is done done flawlessly. And the interesting thing about setting goals that are meaningful is that if they are meaningful, they require work and time and improvement over time. And if you're a perfectionist, you're likely to put that off and never get that good at it. So somebody who does not procrastinate is likely not perfectionistic. They think, I just got to dive in and do it, or else it'll never get done. But the more they dive in and do it, the better they get, and the closer they get to, I guess, what other people would think of as perfection.
Does that answer your question, Pat?
I think so. I kind of was thinking along the lines of more self-handicapping. By procrastinating, I put it off, and it wasn't because I failed, but instead it was I waited the last minute, and so I'm able to kind of protect my self-worth or self-concept, still have this need for perfection, but the fear of not achieving that leads to procrastination and a self-handicapping.
That's a very good insight in that. I think people, when they procrastinate on something that is important and it does require a certain amount of expertise or skill, I think when they put it off, they are saying to themselves, if I wait, I will do a better job by doing it when I'm completely ready. And the idea of self-handicapping is an interesting idea. I think what you mean is you are kind of setting yourself up with an explanation for why it didn't get done right. But perhaps.
Exactly.
Okay, good. I was going to ask you if that was right.
Yeah.
Are you a perfectionist, I might ask?
No, I am not. I am not. But I know a fair number of people who are, and so I thought I'd just call in on that.
Oh, I'm glad you did.
All right. Thank you so much.
Have a nice day. This question kind of dovetails with Pat's question. Some people claim to work better under pressure. Some prescribe to the notion that idle time makes you less efficient and more prone to procrastination. Now, I work in an industry that is like very deadline oriented. And I would look at every employee here and say that we all function based on deadlines, and we generally are pushing our work right up to that deadline. And I don't know that we're necessarily perfectionists, but we're always going back and not letting go of whatever content we're creating until the very last minute, because there might be something that we research or some production value that we can add to it. Would you respond to that, Bruce?
Yeah, I'm going to respond in two different contexts.
Okay.
People who procrastinate in ending or doing something constructive in a new relationship or in a weak relationship, but also just your standard academic procrastination or your vocational procrastination where you put off work till the last minute. Let's do the second one first. Having taught for these past 30 years, been a teacher, a professor, and requiring that things are handed in by a particular deadline, I will tell you firsthand that I can tell when somebody has procrastinated and waited till the last minute. And they may claim they're doing their best work, but they are lying to themselves. They are not doing their best work. I read something last night. I was reading a book that was so well researched that every line in the book seemed fascinating. It was so obvious that the writer had done their homework, and they didn't leave their work till the last minute. There was no way they could have. And it's really obvious when somebody leaves their work till the last minute. It tends to be shallow. There are inaccuracies. That may be true for a report that's due at work. It could be true for an academic paper or preparation for a deadline here in a radio station. Similarly, when people procrastinate in doing something about their health or about a relationship, which I referred to earlier, it doesn't get done better when it's left to take care of itself. I have so many people who I see who say, I wanted to try to do it myself. Well, while they were trying to do it themselves, they were making matters worse. So leaving things to the last minute, you can try to argue it, but maybe
I didn't accurately explain myself, because what I'm talking about is a lot of us will create something for radio production, and we'll get the lion's share of the work done well in advance. But then we save the little nuanced additions to the very last.
That's right.
That seems to me like that's okay.
Oh, it's better than okay. Oh. I talked to a friend of mine recently about doing something, some public speaking, and he said, you know, that's not me to do that. And as I thought about it, he over-prepares for stuff, and it would have been really dry because there wouldn't have been any of that last-minute kind of energy that comes from, you know, from it's a certain anxiety that I think if you channel it and you treat it as excitement, it can make things better. So that I completely understand, and I agree.
Earlier you alluded to OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. We had a call about that, and she had to leave. Can you go into that a little deeper, Bruce?
Absolutely. Obsessive compulsive tendencies disorder, personality disorder. First of all, let's look at the term specifically. Obsessive means you think about something over and over and over and over again, like you know, whether your hair is in place or whether your hands are clean enough, germ-free, or whether your house is clean enough. That's obsessive, thinking, thinking, thinking. The compulsion is the behavioral effort that's made in order to get rid of that obsessive thinking. People can get into obsessive compulsive loops that take them out of everything, society, relationships, the work they're supposed to be doing. So people who are obsessive compulsive are really at risk for procrastinating because, you know, all the pencils have to be in place. They all have to be sharpened. They have to have the right pen to write with, or if they're on the computer, you know, they'll keep changing the font to make sure it's, you know, it's perfect. And so that's obsessive compulsiveness, and it is it's a spontaneity killer, but it's also a procrastination driver.
Shelley's on the line from St. Joe. Shelley, did Dr. Bruce Lease answer your question?
Yes. I guess I was just wondering, thank you for bringing me on. I was wondering if he knows maybe what percentage of kind of that 20% of people that are chronic procrastinators would have OCD, because I recently was diagnosed, and that just, it helped me so much to realize that I had an actual disorder, and I only really sought help when I realized how much it was affecting my whole life. And I would just encourage, I also just wanted to get on, I know you guys are saying this anyway, but just to encourage people who find themselves chronically procrastinating to get help.
Well, thanks for the call, Shelley.
Yeah, it's good that you asked that question, because when I read kind of the symptoms of what they called clinical procrastination, when I read about those, I knew there wasn't any disease or disorder that's really a clinical disorder that's called procrastination. So I would say that once it hits a clinically diagnostic level, it is some other disorder. Procrastination is usually a symptom of something rather than being, you know, the diagnosis. So obsessive compulsive disorder would be one.
We're glad to have you listening to Central Standard on KCUR. When we come back, Dr. Bruce Lease and our ongoing talk about the psychology of procrastination. Your phone calls, of course, 235-2888, 816-235-2888 is the number to call. This is 89.3 FM. And thank you, Jenny Witte. This is Central Standard on KCUR. I'm Bill Anderson. Our monthly guest, Dr. Bruce Lease, and he's here to lead our conversation on procrastination. Most of us do it. Maybe all of us do it at one time or another, to different levels, of course, from occasional distraction to constant distraction. And it affects our lives and the lives of those around us from time to time. Your calls are invited at 816-235-2888. Bruce, do we risk, assuming procrastination reaches a chronic level, do we risk affecting the behavior of our children and passing these bad habits, these traits, on to them?
I'm glad you asked that question, because I was writing a note to myself about what you said a moment before that. You said it affects our lives and the lives of others.
Mm-hmm.
I'm imagining right now all the adults who have to nag their parents to take care of themselves, you know, to be, mom, you need to stop smoking. Dad, you know, it's time to go into an assisted living facility. You keep falling. Mm-hmm. There are so many examples of adults concerned about loved ones. And as long as we're taking the topic of procrastination seriously, you know, those kinds of procrastinating behaviors, not being willing to take care of oneself, causes great distress to other people.
And we have Sandy calling now. Sandy's in Olathe. Hi, Sandy.
Hi there. I have a question about having a 20-something-year-old child that can't get on with life because I believe they're a perfectionist, a musician, likes music, performs, but never follows through, hasn't finished college. And friend has a huge circle of friends. That's not a problem, but just can't mature.
Hmm. It's interesting, Sandy. Thank you for calling. What I experience a lot in my practice is parents with adult kids, like your 20-year-old son, parents who call me, the psychologist, for the kid. And even you're calling the show for him. I mean, he should be the one calling the show saying, I'm not making it in life. I'm not where I want to be. And to the extent that you as a parent extend yourself in order to make him healthier, he'll be able to procrastinate until you are long gone on taking care of himself. A lot of parents whose kids are putting off really important responsibilities, a lot of parents are, you know, they're having them live at home with them, which is no crime, especially in a difficult economic time.
I'm glad you mentioned that.
Yeah, because it's necessary for so many families. But a kid who can get up at 11 o'clock in the morning, living at mom and dad's house, not have to do chores, not be asked to pay some rent by getting a job wherever, those kinds of things just reinforce that belief. At the core of procrastination is the belief that you'll get away with it, that somehow it'll all work out. And as long as mommy and daddy are taking care of a adult child, that adult child will continue to believe it will be okay. And that's the worst thing you can believe when you're a procrastinator.
Sandy, is Bruce describing your situation?
Well, his girlfriend even says, what's the deal? He can't. She's in college. She works full time. And my question is, and his friends say, oh, he's fine. Well, I'm wondering, where do you start getting that person some help, or where do you direct them? Because there's got to be some, instead of spinning your wheels, you've got to move forward. Where does one start if you can encourage your child to get some, if they do need mental health, it's an OCD thing or some sort of dysfunction, where do you tell them to go?
People tend to ask for help only after they start to suffer, only after they experience the consequences of their own misbehavior. So the first place to start with a young person, somebody in their teens, 20s, the place to start is by making sure that there's no cushion that's being created by the people who love them that make life a little too easy.
Okay.
So only when the individual themselves decides that they have a problem will they earnestly and sincerely seek help. So all the calls and all the pleas for help from professionals will do little good if the person themselves doesn't think, I'm a mess, I need help.
Right, right. They have a talent, but they're not fulfilling it. And I think there's a perfectionistic aspect to that. And then when you say, why are you not performing more and why are you not following through with the jobs you get, he gets really jiggy about it. So that's my... Yeah, that was what my call was about.
Thank you.
Good luck, Sandy.
Thank you.
If you'd like to join the conversation about procrastination, phone the show now at 816-235-2888. Again, 235-2888. Do you need to change your life and spend less time procrastinating? I'm Bill Anderson. This is KCUR's Central Standard. Our guest is Dr. Bruce Lee, psychologist and professor of family medicine at KU Medical Center. Dave is on the line, and Dave kind of underscores something you alluded to earlier. Hi, Dave.
Yes. I had a tendency to put off medical exams because, and fear was a big part of it. But then, because I come from a technical background and work on things, all at once it occurred to me, you know, if there is something wrong, the sooner we find out about it, then the sooner we could get whatever treatment might be available for it. And so that really changed my thinking on that one.
Terrific. Did you have a near miss with a medical problem, or were you?
No.
You just decided?
No, I didn't. But I just decided, hey, it's time to change. You know, I'm up in years now, almost 70. Actually, I made the change a few years before this, but I changed my thinking and say, I better get these exams when I'm supposed to.
It's interesting, Dave. You said you have a technical background. Certain orientations, career academic orientations, involve sort of immediate feedback. A technical job, I'm thinking about anything from computer programming to engineering to anything like that, is a job where you see instant consequences. If you make a mistake, you experience the consequences right away. And it's interesting because Sandy, who called before you, said her son was a musician. And, you know, being a musician or being an artist or in a lot of careers, it's expected that you won't have immediate gratification right away. So people can kind of tell themselves, someday I'll be a success. Whereas in a technical career, if you get a line of code wrong in a computer program, it doesn't work. If you measure wrong and something collapses, you see it immediately. So I'm not sure what you meant by technical career, but I find it interesting and I agree that somewhere, if you have a career where you get immediate feedback for what you do, you may learn, I better not procrastinate.
Mm-hmm.
Electronics, I'm into music, and I've done a little computer programming, although I'm not a professional programmer.
But Dave, what prompted you to mention that you're technical in your orientation?
Well, you know, it's kind of the technician part of me that realized, that brought it back to my conscious attention that, hey, you know, if there's something wrong with a machine, the sooner that you find out that the machine isn't working right and what it is, the better it is to fix it before something really breaks and costs you a lot more money.
Exactly. It's right there. It's very tangible. If your career involves some kind of tangible work and you see the impact of doing it wrong, you might learn quickly, check on things. Keep checking. Keep taking care of things because they'll break down if you don't.
And I applaud you, Dave.
Yes.
Thanks.
Have a nice day.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
And now Margaret is calling us from Kansas City, Missouri. You're on the air, Margaret.
Thank you for taking the call. And I have a couple of comments in different areas that my husband exhibits both procrastination and compulsive obsessive piece. And one is that the obsessive piece seems like it can be very functional in a medical situation where you need to be very, very detailed. And he does make decisions and passes them. He's mid-level and very life and death decisions, but chronically. So he's forced, basically, to make those decisions. However, it's the docs that second guess, and when he's ready to leave, then change this and change that. So he deals with it from the other end. However, at home, the I'm going to do this is exhibits in definitely a hoarding. Everybody's identified it as hoarding, the whole family. The basement is so full that it can't be used, and it definitely is affecting relationships because we are in the middle of a move, and the clearing out is not happening because every item has a potential. And that comes from partly because of parents living in the depression. But it's just, oh, my God, it's just so frustrating because he's in the medical field, he won't go and get help in the medical field because he sees all the perils that can happen. So that's where we are.
You know,
I wondered if you could comment on that.
I'd be delighted to comment on that. You know, people have their own, I'll use the phrase loosely, comfort zones, areas in which they feel they are good. You know, you know, my host here, Bill Anderson, feels good behind the microphone. That's part of his comfort zone. Your husband feels good at his job, which is very detailed, and he has to pass out details. When people get into their comfort zone and it's not one that's conducive to other kinds of health or well-being, they can get in a lot of trouble. For example, people who are in concrete sciences or engineering, where they do very, very well and have a comfort zone there, are at risk for coming home where the skill set is very different, talking about personal things, trying to decide what to do about a child that has a problem, trying to make household decisions. If those things are out of their comfort zone and they procrastinate at dealing with them, no matter how good they are at work and how successful they are in their comfort zone, when they get home, they can fail miserably. And I've known people super competent in careers who end up being divorced by their partner because, you know, the skill set that they're avoiding at home is the one they need to keep their marriage together.
This might be a good time to talk to Michelle. Michelle's calling from Kansas City, Kansas.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, Michelle.
I have an experience quite similar to what you just mentioned. My first husband succeeded very well at work, very intelligent person, does IT, and I lost him to video games. And as the technology developed, computer video games. And I struggled for some years with that. Hey, look, I need help with the house. Hey, look, I need help figuring out the bills. And he spent more time in that computer reality than in the real reality. And I divorced him. I had to.
And Michelle, to put it in procrastination terms, there probably wasn't a day that went by where he didn't at least hear your voice in his head, you know, I'll get to that. I know Michelle wants me to do that. I'll get to it eventually. I'll just play one more game. I'll talk to her about this tomorrow. You know, before he knew it, it was too late, obviously. You know, the lights were off, you were asleep, and you were going to wake up the next morning and say, I'm done with you because you have waited too long to take care of what's really important here.
Right. And when I married my second husband, it seems that I have married a different kind of procrastinator. My current husband functions well at work, does pretty well on the house, but he procrastinates in areas of kind of self-fulfillment, talks about how he'd love to write a book,
right,
and he's a really
right.
good writer.
A dreamer.
And
a dreamer.
He wants to start a blog, and those things don't happen. And, I heard what you said to the lady with the 20-some-year-old son, and I don't know how I can not encourage that kind of procrastination, but not be a nag.
Michelle, you realize what you're doing is procrastinating on doing something about the problem.
I'm sorry.
And I've talked to him. Hey, sweetie.
Hey, sweetie is procrastinating.
You're thinking about writing that book. What's going on? Oh, well, is there any way I can be an encouragement without being a nag?
Yeah.
Or is this something he's got to work out on his own?
Procrastination is a boundaries issue. You know, we define ourselves, our identity, by creating boundaries around ourselves. Here's who we are and here's who we're not. And it sounds like he says he wants to be somebody that he probably doesn't really want to be. He probably has just some idealistic view of it. So it might be a good time to stop taking those claims seriously on your part because, you know, they're kind of dreamy and you know, they're not becoming real.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to decide what your boundaries are. If you're feeling frustrated with him, instead of trying to encourage him to do something he's not going to do, you may be procrastinating. Instead of, hey, sweetie, saying, you know, I am frustrated with you. You are a man I love, I care about, and I'm frustrated because I love you so much. And you say you want to be someone you're not, and that's frustrating because I love you.
You know, with the exception of social media, I don't know that we're any different frankly, than generations that came before us. But I do know that we're busy, we're rushed, we're under constant pressure at work, home, and elsewhere. It's hard to maintain, you know, constant focus.
But that pressure is self-imposed, and it's mostly
you had to
cognitive.
Come back with something solid.
You know, it's mostly a way of thinking. I'm not gonna say a number here, but I work a lot of hours a week, and probably way more than I should or most people would expect to. And I don't feel pressure. I feel excited about the next day. It's mm-hmm. it's the way you
placing
think.
You back on the couch. I would agree with you, and you know, maybe we can talk about that sometime.
But the way you think determines whether you feel pressured or whether you feel excited and enthusiastic.
Daisy's calling from Kansas City, Missouri. Hi, Daisy.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well, thank you.
Good. My question is, I wondered to what extent procrastination is part of the mechanism that keeps a person from being able to leave the house on time.
Oh, it is. Oh, there's no question about it. That's a great example, one we hadn't brought up yet, because, you know, you wouldn't make appointments if they weren't important. You know, if your kid's waiting in second grade or kindergarten for mommy to come get him or her, or if it's, you know, to get to church on time or to meet friends, you know, you create that priority. You make the appointment, and then you find other less important things at the moment to distract you. And I call earlier, there's the responsibilities, that's what you're supposed to do, and the distractions, that's what enables you to procrastinate. And if you don't make it to things on time, you've procrastinated.
But see, not leaving the house, to me that sounds more like an obsessive-compulsive problem.
Yeah, and they're linked.
Okay.
I mean, they're linked for sure.
Daisy, was that helpful?
Well, somewhat. And I mean, it's chronic. And so
is it you or somebody you care about?
Somebody I care about.
Okay.
The other piece of it is, how do you not participate in the chronic procrastination about leaving the house so that you can be somewhere on time and still maintain a loving relationship?
I'm glad you asked that. It's parallel to other callers who have talked about I think you're the third caller who has called because somebody else is a procrastinator and is contributing to your stress. And just like I would tell them as procrastinators, I tell you as a potential procrastinator, decide how important it is to you. You may have to decide for each event. If you're going to someone's open house that starts at 5 p.m. and they're procrastinating till 5:30 and the open house closes at 7, it may not be one to stress about. But if you are going to a doctor's appointment and they cancel it if you're 15 minutes late, that's a different story. So don't procrastinate yourself on dealing with the problem and decide which one's important, which one's not, and draw the line. So now I'm in the car waiting.
You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR. I'm Bill. Psychologist Dr. Bruce Leese joins us. We're talking about the levels of procrastination, from occasional and harmless to chronic and life-changing. Back to the phones. Bria is joining us from Kansas City. Or excuse me. Bria.
Hi.
Hi.
That's Bria. That's correct.
Hi, Bria.
I was calling because I feel that, in listening to your description, I suffer from the chronic depression, or excuse me, chronic procrastination that you're speaking about, and I was calling to see what tips you might have that I can start utilizing to sort of deal with that and to stop procrastinating. It's gotten to a point where, I mean, I have multiple items that have gone on and undealt with for a year, 2 years, for one thing. I label these events and these things in my journal as dark clouds that need to be taken care of, because they're like dark clouds that hover over me in my life and cause anxiety. But for some reason, I don't follow through with getting these things done. And I've heard complaints from my family and friends about the procrastination, being late to things, not showing up on time. And I feel that all of that is due to this whole procrastination issue that I have. So I was wondering what tips you might have.
Yeah, thanks, Bria.
I really welcome that call, because it's very important for people to decide whether or not, and we wanted to cover the full range of procrastination today, from fairly harmless to pretty life-threatening, quality of life-threatening. And one way to handle that is to decide if what you suffer from is an underlying emotional condition that's contributing to procrastination. And, you know, depression and anxiety are problems that will cause procrastination and then create a vicious cycle where you're depressed, you don't feel like doing anything, or you're anxious and you're worried, you don't do what you're supposed to do, which just knocks your own sense of yourself down further. So if it's a vicious cycle involving a serious emotional problem, it needs to be addressed as such. If you have occasional bouts with not getting things done that really need to be done, make lists in the morning. But that doesn't sound like what you're talking about. There's the underlying emotional problem, procrastination, but then there's the much more superficial, by 9 o'clock tonight, these things will be done. But Bria, this sounds more like you're struggling with, you called them dark clouds, and that requires more professional help.
For procrastination, do some doctors prescribe meds, yes or no?
Well, if it's a mental illness, which, like I said, it could be, there are medications for helping people who are struggling with depression, anxiety, et cetera.
I want Eleanor, and we're down to about 30 seconds, but I want you to share what I see listed here next to your phone call.
Oh, okay. I was never a procrastinator in the things that were important to me. I had to overcome extreme shyness to be a teacher, and now I'm a minister. And one strategy I learned for people to overcome this tendency to procrastinate is to actually write down a covenant, because a covenant is something you can have before you, and you're less likely to break your word.
Beautiful. I love
that. We're going to have to leave it at that. Great.
Very,
great way
good.
To end the show. I want to thank our guest, Dr. Bruce Lease, psychologist, professor of family medicine at KU Med Center.
Thank you very much for having me again.
You can subscribe to our podcast, hear this conversation again, or access any of our previous shows from the Central Standard page of kcur.org. Tune in tomorrow. We explore the facts and myths behind booming online education. Up to Date is next with the politics of operating inside the Beltway. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton with help from Sydney Llewellyn. I'm Bill Anderson. This is KCUR.